Welcome to the Forging Honor Podcast. I'm Jonathan George.
And I'm Benjamin Jones. Here at The Forge, we explore what it means to live as Christian men. Along the way, we'll be doing weekly challenges to build character through action. We are by no means experts, just two young Christian men trying to make sense of a wild world.
That's right. We're doing our best to learn and hope you'll join us on the journey. And if you want to get directly involved, go to forginghonor.com to find information on how to join our community.
This is episode 19, In Cold Blood.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm glad you remember the title because I forgot to write it in the show notes, which is...
That's what you keep me for, is the
memory.
Yeah,
you've got the memory. Memory of a steel trap. At any rate, challenge wrap-up time. As a reminder, challenges last for 10 days. That's Monday through Friday for 2 weeks. They are simple daily tasks to grow us as men. This previous challenge was get your whole body into some cold water at least once a day. That could be a shower. That could be a bath. That could be get in a really cold creek. All of the above were great. I did terribly on this challenge. I have my excuses, but you know, excuses are never good. I did terribly. I think I did 3 or 4 days.
Can we get a?
Oh my word. Anyway, it was not great. I did get sick halfway through.
Oh, which is
why I kind of put the kibosh on it for a moment.
Pneumonia.
No. Anyway, how did you do, Banjo?
I did pretty good. I did not like this challenge. This was not fun. I do not enjoy cold water. But I did it. I think I did it 8 out of 10 days. I think I maybe even 9. Somebody can fact check me in the Discord. But yeah, this was not fun for me. But I think that was kind of the point. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah. I will say, leading up to this challenge, I was on a solid 2 week streak of doing it.
Yeah.
So I was already doing it prior to the challenge, and it's something I took great value in, and it's something I'm getting back into. It's something I really disliked in college. So our coach would have us do it maybe once or twice a week.
Wait.
After practices.
Cold showers?
Not the cold showers, the ice baths.
Oh, the ice
getting in the cold water. Like I'm just in that general realm. And there could be a discussion because I did some cold showers. I also did some like lie down in cold water. And mm-hmm. I think there is a difference. I don't know. I mean, there is definitely a difference, but I don't know how significant that difference is. At any rate, so getting into cold water, not my favorite thing until recently. It's something I just suddenly started wanting to do.
Really?
Weird, right?
Like an urge or like you're like, oh, like, I'm thinking about this. I'm going to do it.
Well, it was a combination of things. One, it was a really hot day and I just got on a run and I was like, man, I need to get some cold water. Plus, I knew that it's good for muscle recovery, kind of helping out with that side of things after any kind of hard workouts. And I've been doing a lot of working out that week. But then on top of it, just kind of my mental state over the summer has been in and out. You know, I've kind of been on a grind. And I read somewhere about how these little micro stressors in your life are really good for that, really good for mental clarity. So actually, you remember the challenge where we went outside in nature for like 15 minutes?
Yep.
That's when I started this because I went outside and I was looking at the creek. I was like, I could lie down in my creek. It's coming out of a spring, so it's always cold year round. Well, it feels warm in the winter, to be honest.
Really?
Because relative to...
Right.
Anyway, so it's cold enough though. So I tried it and I remember stepping out and feeling like, because I lay in there for like 10 minutes. Mm. I was stepping out and I felt like this weird... like buzz or chill over my whole body.
Yeah.
And I was barefoot stepping on the grass. I don't know. It was just like this crazy moment of clarity. Like, wow, like everything's fine. But I am just human. Like, I don't know, this weird place of knowing where you are in the universe.
Oh yeah. No, I did when we were in college, I did the cryo chamber, thing. So for anyone who doesn't know, these are nuts. You go to this place, they have this room that's basically a deep freezer, and you step in this little antechamber, and the antechamber is 32 degrees, and you sit in there for a minute, and you let your body temperature cool down, and then there's this big steel door, and you open it, and you step into that, and you're wearing like a little hat and a little mask, and little gloves and slippers, and then you're just in your shorts. And you step into this place, and it is ice cold. It's like 300 degrees below zero, I think is what it was. Something insane like that.
Is it really? That's insane. Yeah, I did not know it was that cold.
It's incredibly cold. And then you're in there for about 3 minutes. And when you get down to the end of that 3 minutes, you have to pull this door open, and it's pretty stressful actually. Cause if you touch, you know, your arms are bare, and if you touch, your skin to the frozen wall, it will immediately freeze and peel off of your body. If you're not careful.
Okay. That sounds like you had to sign a waiver at least, right?
You did. Yeah. Yeah. It was nuts. I did it one time with like six other guys, four or five other guys maybe. And we were like, nobody get near us. Nobody touch each other. Anyway, you open the door and you step out of the chamber and you walk out. And that is the closest to feeling like Superman that I've ever felt. I mean, it was just like, I stepped out of it and I was like, I think I can jump tall buildings right now. I think I might be faster than a speeding bullet.
Yeah.
It was great.
I haven't been that cold of an experience, but I know what you're feeling in that moment of like, I guess for me, it was more of just this calm, like not so much like I can go conquer the world, but like I have clarity in what I need to do next.
Yeah.
And so of course I was kind of chasing that feeling again, getting back in the water. And it kind of hits to more or lesser of an extent, kind of depending on how cold of a day it is and how hard of a workout I had or, kind of where my mind is. But I think like, yeah, in the short experiment, I really did notice significant differences on those days where I had done that.
Yeah.
And it carried over to the next day because I was usually doing this in the afternoon. So it would carry over. I would wake up feeling motivated, ready to go. I don't really know exactly why. I'd like to explore that. But those are the results for me. It's something I really liked.
How long were you in the water?
I went 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay. So you were committed. You were in there.
I did do a couple days of just like, okay, I don't really have time for that. The 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'll do a cold shower instead. And so I'm only in that for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, whatever it is. And I think there was definitely a difference due to time. I also think there's a difference with the water hitting you.
Yeah.
And with you standing there, it's
very stressful.
You're being constantly re-exposed to the air, right? Yeah. And once you're in a cold body of water, even if it's moving, it's going to be like your skin is not being re-exposed to the oxygen or the air above that, above yeah. that water as often.
Yeah.
And I think there's definitely a big difference there. So it's almost more mentally challenging to do the shower for me.
Yeah. No, I felt the same way. So I remember hopefully my dad's not listening to this because this is going to embarrass him a little bit, I think, but it's funny enough. So I'm going to go with it. When I was a kid, I like every child, I went through many phases of like wanting to be certain things. And there was about a month when I was like 6 or 7, where I was like, police officer, that is it, locked in for sure. This time we're going to be a police officer. And my dad was like, oh, well, you know what they do in police training, right? And I was like, no, I'm 6. What do I know about police training? And he was like, well, you have to go in a room and they put tear gas in the room and you have to be ready for the tear gas. You have to survive the tear gas. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh, that sounds awful. He's like, yeah, you're going to have to practice. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, well, we'll take a cold shower.
Oh, no.
No, my dad is going to put –
he's going to be like, oh, no. He's going to throw like something in your eyes.
No, he was like, you take a cold shower, and every time you're in the cold shower, you can practice like, you know, you just imagine it's like you're preparing for the tear gas. And I remember that really distinctly. It's 100% possible that I just like dreamed it. You know, it's one of those like childhood memories that I have that it's like, did it really happen? Or am I just saying it happened? But I'm pretty sure it happened. Anyway, going back into it, I was thinking about that this week as I was doing it, because I did all showers except for one or two days. I did an ice bath for my foot, dealing with a little injury that I was using that to heal it. But when I was in the shower, it was a mental exercise for me, because in my brain, as soon as I turn that lever all the way over and I feel the shot of cold water, it's like I can immediately turn it back. Like as soon as I feel it, I can turn it back to hot.
You have the option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all like mental strength to just be like, nope, we're holding it here. We're holding it here. We're holding it here. And to me, that's where a lot of the benefits came from, was like, nope, I'm going to make this decision. Nobody's watching. It's up to me now. But I usually came out of those showers feeling like, I don't want to do that again.
Totally. What's weird about it for me is you can have that experience with, say, running, right? Or going to the gym, right? Because those are also physical stressors, to the point of where you build muscle by doing them, right?
Yeah.
But there is something about willfully just exposing yourself to that cold that adds a different mental layer, even though physically I think it's easier for your body to actually handle that than, say, a run of several miles, right? Like in terms of just overall ability for, like if you asked someone on the street to go run a marathon, like I couldn't do that right now. And a lot of folks couldn't do that right now. But ultimately, almost every single person could withstand 5 minutes in some really cold water, like, and they'd be fine, right?
Well, it's one of the ways they test physically pain tolerance, you know, is they get a bucket of ice water. They see how long you can hold your hand in there. You know, that's like one of the,
yeah, but like after like 30 seconds, ways. You go numb. Like it's just.
No, because it's still, I mean, speaking from personal experience this week, I mean, I put my foot in the ice water again. And for the injury thing. And my brain was like, okay, don't worry. After minute three, you're going to go numb. And I think you do go more numb when it's like your full body, because your actual core temperature is going
down. It's very true. Yeah. The moment you get your neck, that's always the thing for me. If I can get my neck under, I can sit there for, I mean, it can get to a point of being too dangerous.
Right.
You don't want to be under for like more than 30 minutes. But actually, don't take that as actual advice, anybody. I don't know the actual time. I know that I was fine for the 10 to 15 mark. I've never gone more than 15 minutes. So
yeah,
just know that.
For me, when I had my foot in the water, I thought 3 minutes, I'll be fine. And then, you know, I can hang in there for the next seven. But it was incremental. It got worse and worse and worse. And I think that it was because I had the two different temperatures going on. Like part of my body is warm, is fine. That makes some sense. The rest of my body is like, why are you doing this to me? This is ridiculous. Cut it out.
So it sounds like you did not like this challenge.
No. I'm sorry. I mean, but to me, this is like, well, that's the point of it. You know, I mean, I'm a big fan of micro stress. Like I think that's really important.
What other micro stressors do you try to introduce in your life?
I think exercise is one of them. I think the other one, sometimes it's not always physical. Sometimes it's emotional. Sometimes it's like, okay, I need to have this conversation now. That to me is a micro stressor. You know, it's not really like a big deal, but it's enough of a thing that it's like, oh, I don't want to do this. Even just stuff like I need to do the dishes, you know, to me, micro stress to some level is like, okay, recognize that you don't want to do something. Now go do it. You know?
Well, it's not just that. Actually, I should back up. It is that simple in the sense of like, yeah, something you don't want to do. But what is it about those particular stresses? Like even just doing a small thing like today. Yeah. I was kind of tired. I was like, I don't really want to do anything. Well, let me just go wash the dirty mugs.
Yeah.
And that'll get me started. And it did. Like, what is it about that? Why does a little thing like that? Why does something as simple as sitting in water for 5 minutes that's colder than you'd like it to be, why does that work?
Well, on the one level, you know, and I'm no scientist, so let's just get that out of the way now. But one of the things is you get dopamine. You know, you set yourself a small task, you set yourself a small goal, you finish it, dopamine hit, right? That gets you in the place where you need to do more.
That's true, yeah.
You know, and on some level, it's as simple as that. On another level, it's... there's a great quote. I'm trying to remember who said it. I'm going to say it's Anne Lamott, but I don't think that's right. Anyway, whoever this person was, they said they were a writer and they were a good writer. And they said, I believe, you know, I can't write without being inspired, but I always seem to be inspired when I sit at my desk at 9:15 and work for 15 minutes, you know? And the point of it is like, yeah, you inspiration is part of art, but part of it is just showing up, you know, and being in the place where you right. need to be and getting yourself in that habit. And, you know, I think for us, you know, the whole idea of the podcast is we're trying to figure out what does it mean that we're Christian men, right? What do we've been given these limitations, so to speak. We've been given these boundaries, you know, you could say we've been given our poetic form. And our role is to figure out how to fill that form well, to fill it, I don't know what the right word is, dutifully, intelligently, with integrity.
I don't really know.
Yeah. In order to do that, I think it starts with the small things, you know, it's the cleaning your room. It's the taking the cold shower. It's the doing the 15 pushups, you know. But I think you get in those little habits, and that sets you up for the big moment, you know. Mm. It's like our parents always, you know. It's like my dad was not an NBA star or anything, but I wanted to learn how to play basketball, and my dad would always say, "Oh, you got to learn the fundamentals. And I think he said it partly as a joke, but partly because it was true, right? Like, I'm never going to win I'm never going to play in the NBA. But I feel confident going into any pickup basketball game because I know the basics, right? But you gotta practice all of those, And Michael Jordan didn't necessarily it wasn't that he just walked onto the court, you know, and he was great. I mean, a little bit it was that, but
he had natural talent, right? There's no denying anyone in the NBA has natural talent, right?
An enormous amount of natural talent.
But also natural talent only goes so far.
Right.
I don't know how far it could take you. Like, I don't know, top tier high school, good college. Like, at what point is that?
You know, at some point, it runs out.
Yeah,
it does. Just in terms of time. But it's like, you know, you're a father. You want to be a good father. I'm not a father. I would like to be a father maybe one day. But if we're gonna be good at that, that's going to involve stressful things that we can't think of. You know, it's going to involve some great things we can imagine, some we can't, but it's going to involve some terrible things that we can't possibly imagine. And we've got to get ready for that. And how do we get ready for that? It's the Hydra, you know, it's the Hydra archetype, you know.
Here we go about archetypes.
Call
yourself a teacher. All you have to do is say the word archetype and throw some Greek thing out there, and then boom, now you're knowledgeable about the subject.
Let us turn in our textbooks to Aristotle. The archetype of Spider-Man. But you have to get ready for that next thing that's coming for you. And I think you do that by the little things. I don't know. What kind of micro stressors do you put into your day?
Well, I mean, if I'm being honest, I have to be so intentional about it. In the sense of, like, I don't think about it like it's micro stressors, I guess. I'd have to be so intentional about it. In the sense of the habits that I know are setting myself up for success, right? things like exercise, try to exercise first thing in the morning. But then, the ice bath at some opportunity, I really enjoy doing that at this point. I think a big thing for me is getting over the hump at some point in the day. Like, it always happens. I can start the day very motivated, but most afternoons, usually after lunch, after a meal, there's this hump of like, I don't want to do anything now. I'm done.
Yep.
I am so done for the day. Even though I'm not, I've got hours left of work to get done and I've got a family to take care of.
You need a little siesta.
So finding a task that is not a task that like directly affects my work or my family, I think is really what it is. Because like you said, the small achievable thing. So yeah. Maybe it is doing dishes, which is helpful for the family, but maybe it's, okay, there's this, I don't know, thing I've been wanting to do out in the shop or something. Maybe there's just go outside and move a few rocks around on this wall that needs repairing. Like just little things that don't really, like they're not going to have an effect on me today or tomorrow or even the next year. But it's a small task that gets my brain back into the work mode. And then I'm like, okay, I can get back to work. I can be motivated to do it. I don't know if that's really what you're looking for here. I know that when it comes to those quote unquote micro stressors, I feel like a lot of things are thrown at me throughout the day anyway, especially being a father.
Yeah.
And I don't think we need to necessarily obsess over like, this is a micro stressor and I need to have these micro stressors in my life. So I'm going to bathe in cold water 5 times a day so I can hit my right number of micro stressors.
Right.
No, you don't need to do that. But there's definitely a sense of challenging yourself. We live very soft lives.
Yes.
At the end of the day, we live very soft lives. And the fact that we have that option as humans, we're going to want to take that option. So I think it's more of calling ourselves to be awake. That's what it is. It's not so much like I don't need to go out and be like Navy SEAL type crazy, whatever, but like something that keeps me awake in the day to day, because it's very easy to go through life so passively, I think is something I'm realizing.
Well, there's a great quote from James Dickey, who wrote the book Deliverance. If you've ever read that, it's really good. I don't know if you'd like it, but it's really good. He's got this great quote where he says, the problem with living in America today is somebody can go their whole life without discovering if they're a coward. And I think that's a great quote. You can go your whole life without knowing whether or not you're a coward.
That's very interesting.
Cause we don't have, we don't have a war to fight. You know, we don't have a battlefield that we're going to go into
yet.
Yeah, sure. But that we know of, right? And it's not like we're out, you know, fighting in the streets for our food or anything like that, you know. Death is still a relatively rare thing, all things considered, in the course of human history.
At least for our age. Like, we know we're going to face death, right? It's this very easy idea of like,
I don't think we really do. Like, that's the thing. Really? I think you and me at our age don't really, I mean, it's part of the thing.
It never crosses your mind that you could just be taken out when you drive into.
No, I 100% feel that, but it's not real. It's kind of like when you're, I think this is fair. It's kind of like when you're 10, right? And somebody tells you, you know, someday the sun is going to burn out, right?
Right.
And you're like, yeah, I can see. And then for like 2 weeks, you're like, this is the most terrible thing in the universe.
It's
going to
happen. Yeah.
How is anybody walking around right now? You know, like how is anybody living life knowing that the universe just is going to die someday? Right. And then you realize that like it's a billion years and it's not going to happen while you're on the planet, you know?
Right. So why care?
And I think death ends up being something similar, you know? Hmm. And I think that's in some ways, it's always a temptation of man.
Can I ask you a question on that front? Have you been to very many funerals?
I've been to I wouldn't say I've been to a ton, but being a pastor's kid, I've been to a few, you know, maybe let's call it 5 or 6.
You ever been to a funeral for a close family member? Not necessarily immediate family, but like someone that you spent enough significant time with that, like, I don't know, direct impact on you in that way.
Yeah, no, not as such. I went to my great grandfather's funeral, memorial service, if I'm not mistaken. And I've had people in my church who I was close to, or knew well, I should say, who died.
Older or younger?
Older.
Okay.
Never had anyone my age. Okay. Die. All of that, my
there's a micro stressor.
That's a macro stressor, dude. That's like, depending on the situation, that's like trauma.
Depending on the situation. So only micro in the sense of like, it's not physical, but it is very emotional and mental. And I think that's something, in my opinion, more people should be going to funerals. Funerals are happening all around us, right?
Yeah.
And I've been to funerals for all ages, everything from a very young baby. Actually younger than that, a stillborn infant. All the way up to very, very older gentleman, you know, fought in World War II, lived a full life kind of guy.
Do you know the number of funerals that you've been to?
Off the top of my head, no. I'd have to, it'd take me a little bit to count. But yeah, part of that is I come from a very large family, and our large family knows a lot of people.
Yeah.
And everything in between, right? Went to a funeral for someone my age. It was a tragic situation. Not going to go into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, folks, all runs the gamut, right? And I think that's something that has forced me to face that reality of like, any moment, like I could die. And I think something that very much motivates me is like, I don't know what's going to take me out, but my first question is, what happens when I die? Not in the sense of like, what happens to me? I know what's happening to me. What happens to my son?
Yeah.
After I die. And I think that's a huge motivator in one, to make sure that the world that is left to those that are left behind is one where they aren't having to stress about anything that I left behind or whatever, like, but they're able to handle it well. So like, I see a lot of motivation setting them up for that rather than even preparing for my own death. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, let me back up. It's interesting because I feel like I grew up thinking about death a lot because of my allergies. So folks who don't know, I have a couple of severe allergies, some dairy, some nuts and some different stuff, and anaphylactic kind of situation. Have had those allergies since I was a couple of year old, something like that. And so it's the kind of thing where it's growing up, it was like, well, don't let Banjo have the ice cream because he's going to die. And at some point you kind of put together like, what does that mean? Like, oh, I'm not going to be here. Like
what does death mean?
What is this death thing? What are you talking about? Praise the Lord, it never happened. But I think I,
yet. Sorry, it's kind of Mormon.
Well, hey, when it comes, and yeah, it comes for us all, I guess. But it's one of those things where I think about like, okay, so I go to somebody's house and I'm eating food. My mouth starts to itch, you know, is this it? Is this could be,
this is how I die.
Yeah. And I think I don't know.
This family's house.
Wait, it's more like, this is the food.
This really,
it couldn't even taste good.
I was hoping my last meal had to be this soup that I don't even like.
Yeah, it was like chicken broccoli and they accidentally put cream in it. Yeah, I don't want to go out with that.
It's like, could it not have been a steak where they accidentally put butter on it? Like, come on.
Man, that would have been good. But yeah, so far so good. Anyway, but it's like, there's that line in Hamilton where it's, see, I never thought I'd live past 20. Where I come from, some get half as many. And I, when I heard that, I was like, I don't know if I really thought I'd never live that long, but I do remember getting to 21 and getting married and being like, oh, I made it. Like, I crossed that line. I wasn't sure if I was going to make it that far. And now that I'm older, it's like, you know, 22, it's like, okay, what's next? Like, I hadn't really thought I was going to make it this far. what do I do with the time that I have left, you know? And I don't have a kid. So it's interesting because I don't really think about, you know, financially.
But you have a wife.
I have a wife. And so there is that, but neither of us are alone in that sense. Right. Like,
right. Right. She has a family. You have a family.
She has a family. Yeah. I have my family. We're both very young. If either one of us died, we'd be able to make it.
Right. Right.
You know, Lord willing, it doesn't happen, but that leaves me a certain amount of freedom to think about other things. And so the thing that I think about is, and this is funny because we've strayed far away from cold water.
We'll get back to it.
Well, I find this more interesting and more pleasant than cold water.
Oh, okay. So we do need to get back to the cold water. We need to keep you in the unpleasant territories.
In the stress, yeah. But I think about like, what do I leave behind in a legacy sense? Like if I go out tomorrow, do I get remembered? Have I done enough to leave an impression, you know? And it's a little bit more of an existential.
Wait, so thing. You want to leave that impression?
Yes.
Huh.
I don't want to be forgotten. It's one of my deep rings. It boggles my mind looking at the course of human history, right? If you look over the course of human history, billions and billions of people have lived on this planet. And there is a certain number of people that the course of their lives was so compelling that we remember them to this day, thousands of years later.
See, I bet they all took cold showers.
And I'm not, you know, it's like, well, you know, that sort of thing only happens like by the course of, you know, about 6,000 different twists of fate, so to speak, that one can't plan, you know? So it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm going to be the next Julius Caesar or something like that. Like, that's how you get Napoleons, and that doesn't usually end well. But it is the kind of thing where it's like, okay, within the realm of my community, am I living a life that is noble? Am I living a life that is worthwhile?
See, I don't think noble and worthwhile mean remembered. I think there are plenty of people that have passed away in obscurity who have lived far better lives than you or I.
Well, yes.
More noble lives, we could say.
But I think about Achilles, you know. Achilles dies young, and he gets the glory that he's looking for. And I've always admired that part. I don't love the die young bit, but I understand it.
Well, there is something about dying a hero that is preferable to dying in unfulfilled dreams.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become a villain.
Oh my goodness.
It's right there. You're going to toss me that softball?
Fair. Fine. Fine. I lobbed that one over the plate and I didn't even mean to.
And it's a 400-foot home run.
Anyway, I do think it's interesting that that's something of desire to you. And I'll admit, I like being known. I seek respect among my friends. I don't want to be someone that's remembered. But at this stage of my life, like, there's no way I'm being remembered beyond the next generation. Right? I mean,
do you remember your grandfather or your great-grandfather?
Okay, I remember my great-grandfather.
You can at least go that far.
One of my, maybe at least, but I only remember him because I knew him personally. Like, I don't... And then I do have a couple of ancestors, like great, 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 great grandfathers who I know of because of history books.
Yeah.
But like it's a single, it's maybe two sentences describes everything I know about them. Right. And in another couple generations, those sentences won't even matter. I think what's more interesting is how do you live a life of obscurity, a life where no one remembers who you are in 5, 10 generations, whatever, however many generations. What's fascinating is that life still mattered, right?
Yes, yes. I don't mean to hesitate over that.
There was a lot of hesitation.
Well, I'm just thinking about it. I'm just realizing that there, you and I both want to live, we could say, a life of honor, right? An honorable life. But the way that we see that playing out is, or the way that we see that playing out in an ultimate sense is different. So I think we both want to live with honor, to be honorable. And it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, for you to live with honor means, regardless of what happens in your life, you know that you did the right thing and you are doing right by the people around you. You're looking out for them. And you may not be remembered, but you did what was required of you and you excelled at that.
Ultimately. And yes, that's not to say I don't want the respect. That's not to say I don't want the honor that comes with achieving great things. I just think I haven't been placed in a time and place where that is achievable by me.
So I think...
And if that time comes along, that's not to say I won't go for it. I won't shoot for it.
Right.
Right. I think there's such a huge piece of our lives that has to be... We have to be content and not apathetic. And maybe this is where cold baths come back in. Is I find I struggle because I can be content to the point of apathy.
Right.
And then something festers within me of like, man, I want more than this.
You need your ambition.
Right. So hitting those micro stressors in your life, hitting those things in your life that allow you to have something to work towards. I can go on a longer run. I can lift a little more weight. I can do, you know, this thing that is a great personal goal that allows me to then be content with where I am. I think that strikes a big balance.
So that's interesting. So I think the part of what I think about living honorably or living well, that if you're doing it right, if you're doing it with excellence, then in my worldview, I think you become the kind of person that people look to, and you become.
Absolutely. I'm not saying you don't.
Well, no, but I'm saying that as a result of that honor and work ethic and ambition and drive or whatever, and all those honorable things, whatever they are, as a result of that, my understanding is that you get put in places of prominence, places of respect, so to speak. And then the question is, what do you do with that, right? Because then you can go
if
back.
If that happens. I don't think it necessarily will.
I don't know how to argue for it, but I think...
Coming from the other side, I want to accept what you're saying because I want to believe that the American dream of anybody can get after it, anybody can achieve the upper echelon, et cetera, is true.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, I do. I have those values and I do work hard to achieve the next level, right?
Right.
I'm blessed to live in a place where that can happen. However, if I become so focused on that, I think I do lose something of the honorable man that I should be. Maybe that's what it is. Like
the honor should not be the goal, but I think or in other words, the goal shouldn't be, I'm doing this because I want to be Caesar, right? And I'm going to call myself out because I think maybe that's what I said. So I'm calling myself out on that. But I do think that if you act in this way, you need to be ready because it may be that sort of responsibility is going to show up at your doorstep and you need to be ready for it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, it does. I think we're pretty much in agreement here.
We usually are. We just
I don't really know. I'm trying to figure out where the disagreement is, because maybe we're approaching it from different angles. Like, we're both definitely saying, to whom much is given, much is expected. And we're also both saying that to be responsible in the large things, we have to be responsible in the small things.
So do you go after, I guess this is it. Do you go after the next big thing? Or do you wait?
Depends on what you mean by the next big thing. Yes and no. Like, I go after the next big thing that's going to fulfill the duties that I have to my family and my community and to God. Right?
Yeah.
So if it falls within those boundaries, like, yeah, absolutely. Why not? But I think anytime you start to sacrifice those things that I just mentioned for the favor of that status or the reputation, et cetera, or you desire that stuff and you're never able to be contented with where you have ended up or where you currently are, then I think one, you're cutting short what you should be, and you're not living honorably.
Yeah. Which I think is probably one of my flaws is it, or at least one of my temptations is ambition. I mean, that's a thing that's pretty deeply at my core is I want to be not necessarily.
That's funny. I just thought of something funny. I don't know how insulting this is, but if you have ambition, why did you set out to be a teacher? I'm just being honest here. Like, if you had ambition, you should have gone and joined the army or something. Like, literally.
Well, so pursue it's politics,
anything other than a teacher.
Well, it's interesting. So first of all, I wanted to go into the army from a very young age, but you know what kept me from the army?
What's that?
Allergies.
Oh yeah.
I can't be in active service. So I started to look for other outlets. And for me, it came down to, and this actually does get back to the cold showers thing. For me, I think because I was a very frightened child. It's a very frightened child. I could not make it through The Empire Strikes Back for 12 years.
Really?
Really. Until the age of 12, I could not make it through that movie.
Well, but I mean, wait, you watched it? Wait, when did you first try to watch Empire Strikes Back?
I was probably 6. The first time, I would think.
Okay, I was older than you, but still, like,
So I had a really hard time as a child grasping the concept that sometimes in movies, the good guys get captured and like bad things happen to the good guys. And they still win in the end. So when Han Solo gets, sorry, spoilers for an ancient movie at this point.
If you've never seen The Empire Strikes Back.
You need to be listening to a different podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but you know the scene where Han Solo gets captured and they're torturing him?
Yeah, yeah.
It's before the carbonite freeze. I never even made it to the carbonite freeze, because every time I got to the part where Han Solo got tortured, I had like an emotional breakdown. I would like run screaming from the room.
Oh.
Multiple
times. Poor
little Banjo, because I was like, the bad guys got him. They win. How is this okay? I couldn't process it. And so I was very frightened as a child, very aware of good and evil, and right and wrong. And I ended up with this question of like, am I a coward or not? And all of the evidence seemed to point to yes, because I was running out of, I couldn't handle movies, scared of the dark. And I was just like generally afraid of things. And I was like, I can't live this way. This is not going to work out. So then for me, probably about high school, right when I started running, I think maybe middle school, I was like, I was reading a lot of Teddy Roosevelt stuff, reading up on Teddy Roosevelt, big influence on me. Cause he was asthmatic, and he just basically decided like, I'm not going to be asthmatic anymore. And he just worked his way out of it. And I was like, that is what I want to do. That is how I want to be. That is how I want to live my life.
It's pretty insane, really.
Yeah, it's absurd. He goes on to be one of like probably the fittest president in American history. So, you know, there's that.
Depends on how you measure it, but yeah, okay.
Yeah. He's the Rough Rider. I mean, he leads the charge up San Juan Hill. I mean, come on. Yeah, you can debate his presidential policies, but that is, I mean, that is a man. That is
anyone would follow that, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's to me like, well, how did he get there? He decided to be that. He chose to be that thing. And to me, these things like micro stressors or the little habits that we choose, it's okay, how do we choose to be that man? How do we choose to be excellent at who we are and what we do? Most of all, to me, why would you settle for anything less? Why would you settle for anything less? If you can choose to be excellent, why not?
Well, and if it's as simple as introducing some new habits into your life, like I was watching some video the other day about, what was it? Don't remember exactly, but basically just like, look, people promise, here's this new great plan that's going to change your life. Here's this new great blah, blah, blah. And he's like, guys, like, no. Just introduce a few good habits into your life and stick to them. And over the course of weeks, months, years, they add up. You become a different person.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what we're trying to explore here. What are these core habits that can be helpful to us? And maybe cold showers isn't it in the long run. I don't know. I think it's one that's really good for now. I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
That maybe not every day of the week, but I think a reasonable goal of like 3 times a week. Stuff like that, like reading your Bible every day, reading, you know, whatever, the exercise every day, getting up at the same time. I'm terrible at that one. That's a challenge we need to do, getting up at the same time every day.
That's actually one I'm very good at.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I have to be because I'm a teacher.
Okay, fine. I used to be good at it. I used to be good at it because I used to have cross-country practice every morning at 6 a.m. So
yeah, that did it. So that did it real fast.
Anyway.
But I mean, to your point, like we know the things that we need to do, right? Like
So why don't we do them? That's a big part of this.
Right. And I think personal opinion, personal little rant that I'm going to get on, folks can just skip ahead if they choose, but I'm going to go on it anyway. I think it's because we fail to recognize ourselves as individuals in modern America. I think we think of ourselves as,
you've mentioned that before. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This is my hobby horse. I think we say, I belong to this group. I believe
your soapbox, as it were.
Yes, you might say, I belong to this group. I belong to this organization. I'm this, I'm that. And by playing these identity politic games, we sacrifice any of our individual choice. And we sacrifice the responsibility that it is to be a human being. Like, you have to make all of the choices that every human being has had to make since the beginning of time. You have to make those choices. Nobody else can make those choices for you. And you don't get out of it because you get to play some identity politic card. Okay, I'm going to get canceled now. That's fine.
That's fine. If you're not getting canceled, you're kind of doing something wrong.
You're probably doing something wrong.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I won't go to Canada. That's just my...
You will not fit in well at Canada, Banjo.
Which is a shame because I do like maple syrup.
Hey, they have it in Maine. I mean...
Yeah, like I want to go to Maine.
Maine's cool.
No, I do want to go to Maine.
I want to go to Maine.
I'm sorry, anybody in Maine. I actually do want to go to Maine. It looks like a lovely place. Anyway.
Back, you could get into some cold water there if you wanted to.
Some very cold water in Maine. Yeah. I just want to say, I think we've set the record for farthest afield in this episode.
Perhaps so. Kind of circling back around, though. This is definitely one I want to continue. Keep it as a habit in my life, which, by the way, I don't know where I heard this, probably Art of Manliness guy saying it counts as a habit if you do it 3 times a week, right? That's a habit.
3 times a week for how long?
Your life. I don't know.
Just in general.
The point being, if you're doing it averaging 3 times a week, you've set a habit, really. Like, yeah, you shouldn't be shortchanging yourself in that way. Because part of that is we set these lofty goals of we're going to do this thing every single day. And then we miss one day. And it's like, well, there goes my 100-day streak. Okay, well, I'm done. No, right. Okay. You can set more reasonable goals than that. Like right now, that's my running goal. That's my work. That's my general exercise goal.
Yeah.
If I can do it 3 days a week, then that's okay. We're good. And it's surprising. I end up doing it more than that because I set a reasonable goal. Weird how that works. Anyway.
It's almost like when you decide to do 3 dishes and you end up doing the whole sink.
Well, that there's like a, that's a whole, the that's a whole nother thing right there. I heard other advice, stuff about like, okay, you don't have to work out in the morning, but promise yourself you're going to at least put on your gym clothes.
Yes.
First thing when you wake up. And then you'll be like, well, I'm already in them. Might as well do a few push-ups.
It's the little decisions.
Or when I go on a run, I only ever tell myself I'm going to run 1 mile. I'm like, just 1 mile. I'm going to at least get 1 mile in. Usually I end up doing 3. Like, oh, I'm feeling good. Maybe I go 3. Maybe I go 5. I don't know. I should probably train more intensely. I have a race coming up, but eh. The point being, circling back around, micro stressors in your life. Like when I go get in the cold water, it's 2 minutes. If I can make it 2 minutes, I'm golden.
We should now, you know, just we're getting to the tail end of the episode. But I think it's worth mentioning. There is a difference between a micro, like looking for micro stress and masochism, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You don't need to be lying on beds of nails or anything.
Or just causing yourself pain, you know, like self-harm or anything like that is, you know, that's not healthy. That's not micro stress. That's self-abuse.
Well, what's the intention, right? Like if the moment I'm getting out of that cold water, I feel amazing. I'm ready to go tackle everything. It's a different story, right?
And yeah, in some ways, I think it's even just like, you know, you need to know the line, but you need to know the line between going towards a goal and hurting yourself, you know, and working towards something and hurting yourself. Because even something as simple and innocuous as an ice bath, you know, if you insist on, well, I'm going to be the toughest person, I'm going to be the strongest person, and you stay in the water for 20 minutes and you get frostbite, you know, and
right,
you know, that's different, you know, that's not healthy, you know, so. I think the point of micro stress in your life is to build that anti-fragile mindset, right?
But
introduce a little stress into your system so that you're a little bit stronger, but not doing something that is actively harming and evil for your system.
I think that goes back to the title of our episode, actually, which we've barely talked about. So we had a whole section planned about that. But yeah, as you do that, kind of you build that stress, right? You're removing the old self. That's a very Christian concept, right? The old you're casting off the old self.
Right.
And
taking off the old,
right?
Man,
you literally are man. you're dying to your sin is how scripture puts it.
Right.
When it comes to these habits that form us as better men, right, our old self is dying off in a way and we're becoming someone new. It doesn't happen today. It doesn't happen tomorrow. It happens over the course of a very long time. That's sanctification in the spiritual sense. But in the physical sense, like you'll be a different person. Which they're tied together. And there's some theology there that I don't know. We're pretty far into this episode, so I'm not going to go into. But anyway. It's getting late. We're recording this in the evening. We typically record in the morning, but we're recording in the evening, and so my brain is starting to fall apart here.
Yeah. We've pushed this horse about as far as it can go. Any farther places afield you want to crawl before we
not tonight. I think this is a fine place to end it.
I think folks should start giving us comments, start giving us
tell us what we're doing here. We don't know what we're doing.
tell us the things that we need to be doing better at, because that can be some micro stress for us. You know, nothing like a little heart attack in the morning reading the this is what I hated about his voice. That'll set you straight. Or I don't know.
Something like that.
Give us some reason to improve. Give us some way that we can get better. We want to be the best podcast host we can be.
Very good. on to the next challenge. As a reminder, challenges last for 10 days. That's Monday through Friday for 2 weeks. They are simple daily tasks to grow us as men. This one, very, very simple, less stressful than getting your body into some cold water. We are reading the proverb of the day every day. Very simple. The concept is, there are 31 chapters in Proverbs.
From the book of Proverbs.
Not
don't go out and buy a fortune cookie every day.
Don't go be finding Sun Tzu as good as that is, or Confucius, or whatever Proverbs you find. No, Proverbs.
The book of Proverbs,
largely regarded to be written mostly by Solomon, etc., blah, blah, blah. 31 chapters in the book of Proverbs. That fits very nicely into our calendar month, where most months have 30 or 31 days. So you read the chapter for the day that corresponds. So we'll be starting this on Monday the 11th. So you will read the 11th chapter of Proverbs. And the beautiful thing about this is if you miss a day, you don't have to go back and read the chapter that you missed. You just read the day that you pick up on, right? And if it's the 30th, which we're not going to hit in this challenge, I don't think, you would just read 30 and 31 that same day, you know, move on. I have appreciated this. I've done this for a long time. I've appreciated it because I never feel like I have to catch up. I end up reading every chapter eventually, but if I miss a day, it's okay. I'll come back around. The goal is consistency, right? You're in Proverbs regularly. You're soaking it up. And you could do this with any book of the Bible. Proverbs is just one I chose. Partially because it happens to align very nicely and other people have done it. Anyway, that's the challenge. Very straightforward. Any thoughts, Banjo, before we close out?
No, I've spent a little bit of time in Proverbs. I'm looking forward to going back through it again. Every time I read Proverbs, I find one proverb that is like, wow, that makes a ton of sense. I feel like I can put that immediately to use in my life. And I find 15 proverbs that I'm like, I have no idea what this is talking about, but it sounds like right. Good advice. And so I'm excited to see this time through how many make sense to me and how many don't. And I'm going to see if there are ways that I can learn about the ones that I don't. So
one thing I'll say then is as you go through it, how about we as hosts and other folks can do this too. We just note down, like, is there a particular proverb that day that sticks out to us? Just a single verse. So on the 11th, is there a single verse in the 11th chapter that sticks out to us that day? And then we can kind of come together at the end of the 2 weeks and see where we are on that. And maybe we can be putting them in the Discord as well if we want. And I think that'll be good.
That sounds like a good strategy.
Awesome.
This has been the Forging Honor Podcast. Music and production is by Elliot George. For more information about what we do or to learn how to get involved, visit our website at forginghonor.com. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to like, subscribe, and give us a rating to bring others into the Forging Honor journey.
On our website, you'll find information on how to do the challenges alongside us, as well as links to the many resources we mention in the show.
And we do make a small amount from any purchases you make through our website link, so thank you in advance.
Thanks for taking the time with us today. We hope you'll take up the work alongside us and join us in the task of Forging Honor. We'll see you next time.